Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid reporting for duty. I love to get things started with some good news. So here's some good news. I figured you would enjoy hearing this. The Texas Supreme Court on Friday effectively shut down a federal challenge to the state's ban on abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, closing off what so-called abortion rights activists said was their last narrow path to blocking this new law. Now, this is being reported in the New York Times. So as you can expect, they're reporting it complete with all of the loaded words and the way in which they will describe things is intended to skew your opinion in favor of abortion, not away from it. But the bare details of the story are that this decision was the latest in a line of, as they deem it, blows to the constitutional right to abortion. No one has a right. Legally, do you have a right to abortion? Yeah, technically, on paper you do. But do you actually have a right to kill an innocent person? Of course not. So all this tub thumping and hooping and hollering and throwing dust up in the air and all the chest beating and all that stuff going on about a so-called constitutional right. On paper, technically, yeah, you have. I mean, slave owners had a right technically to own slaves, according to the laws of the United States prior to the Civil War. But did they really have a right to own other people as slaves? Of course not. This is like that. So just FYI, Roe versus Wade is very likely to go the way of the dodo bird. And I'll be very happy to see it take place. I hope I live to see it. I hope it happens in my lifetime. And it may happen this year. Wouldn't that be something? Talk about a topic that we could discuss from here to forever if that winds up happening. But I wanted you to be aware of it. Cyrus will get a link posted to this New York Times article so you can read it for yourself. But again, just be aware that the way it's written is intended to elicit not happiness on your part, but opposition to that. Now, in a minute, we can do that now. I think, Cyrus, if you're ready, the White House is briefing. They're not just briefing like our European allies. Of course, we have Vice President Harris over there doing that. It's not that they're just briefing like senators and congressmen and just people in general who have a need to know. They're also now briefing TikTok stars or TikTok influencers about, of all things, Ukraine. Now, the sad thing is, and Cyrus, you have that audio, I believe, right?
Yes, it's all set.
Okay. The phrase TikTok influencer to me is ridiculous, but it's still true because sadly, the influencers on TikTok actually do influence people. That's what makes it so pernicious. But I never would have thought, you know, at the upper echelon of the White House that they would say, you know what, we really need to brief these people in, the people who are ranting about being misgendered, the people who are, you know, just they're all up in arms because their students misgender them in the classroom and they post these angry, tearful rants on TikTok. We better get those people up to speed on what's going on in Ukraine. And so they are.
This person dances and has 1.8 million people that influence her. So we need her.
Oh, yeah.
We better debrief her on what's happening.
She needs to know exactly what our strategy is in Ukraine because... Now, does she use interpretive dance to influence people, or is it just she's dancing and talking about policy in Ukraine at the same time?
And I'm not saying just because you dance doesn't mean you can't be smart and, you know.
How many times have I heard that in my life? If I had a nickel for every time someone has said that to me.
You'd have a nickel. All right. Where are we?
All right, so let's set them up. Like bowling pins. So what's the first one?
All right, we'll just do these in order here. I've got, I don't know who these people are. These names mean nothing.
I would lose all respect for you if you did.
But I bet if you're driving around with your kids and they have TikTok, I bet they know who they are. All right. So how about we start with Aaron Parnass 6.
I don't know. All right. And what's his deal? He's a dancer.
No, this guy, I have no idea. I don't know.
Parnass.
Okay.
Yeah, Aaron Parnass.
If you say so.
Well, let me just share with you. Now, this is how it's described. Hold your horses, Cyrus. This is in the Washington Post. Alex Parnass has recently emerged as a powerful TikTok influencer by providing nonstop news updates about Ukraine. On the night of, I mean, he may be a good guy for all I know. Right. I've never heard of him before. On the night of Russia's invasion, he hosted TikTok live streams discussing the events to over 800,000 viewers. Since then, each day he has posted videos breaking down news about the war every 45 minutes from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Parnass says that his news is not partisan and he's getting his information directly from reputable sources in the country, such as family members there, local Ukrainian journalists, Ukrainian television, etc. So well, he's one
of them. That's way more substantial than someone that just dances and they have TikTok users because they, you know, are cute and dance. So that's more meaningful. At least this guy's trying. All right, let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, folks. So I just had the pleasure of joining a White House briefing with a senior official from the National Security Council. And I want to talk to you about what America is doing to help Ukraine, because it's important to spread accurate information here. And let me just quickly say, as someone who has family in Ukraine, I am very grateful for what America has done thus far. So first off, the United States has provided a significant amount of militaristic as well as humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Hundreds of billions of dollars have already gone to Ukraine, and there will be more. Next, we are seeing the United States sanctions on
Russia.
Wait a minute.
I just realized something. These TikTok influencers are going to influence us. So I'm allowing TikTok influencers to influence my audience.
They got us. They tricked us.
Okay,
well,
press pause on that guy. Okay, so what else do we have?
We've got Kai.
What's the dancing one? Is that Khalil Green?
Is that, I don't know, man.
Matt Miller, Jules Turpak?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Just throw a dart. Throw a dart. Play it.
All right. Here we go.
So I just got off of a Zoom call with the White House about the situation in Ukraine. Now I'll just share three quick points of analysis that came to mind. So first, I think the best attempt at direct answer to what I asked was the first point that they made, in that the invasion in Ukraine is so large that it could have global consequences which would affect everyone throughout the world, including here in the United States. Second, while I'm glad that they acknowledge that other issues, both domestic...
I'm done.
That didn't take long.
Next.
All right, and this is Marcus DiPola.
Okay.
Here are the three most important bits of the White House briefing that me and a bunch of other creators just attended.
I'm done.
First, if Russia uses chemical...
No. He said that me and my... He can't even use... He doesn't know when to say I or me. When me and my buddies did... I'm done. He's got no influence. He can't even speak English.
Well, he's got influence.
How many people does he dance to?
All of these people have well over a million.
What if I did a dancing version of this show? Do you think I could reach a wider audience?
I'd probably crash the network at that point.
I would implode Relevant Radio.
Yeah, let's not find out.
All right, who's next?
That's it. I can't do any. That's enough influencers.
Thank you.
I've been influenced. Have you been influenced?
No. I've been influenced further to distrust TikTok. So we had Khalil Green, Aaron Parnass 6, Marcus DiPola, and you know what? I'll say this much. I think that a great deal of what I've seen anyway on TikTok is ridiculous, and I've used the word pernicious before. I'm sure there are some things on there that aren't, but to me, that's like going to... I don't know. It's like going to like a five and dime store trying to find an expensive piece of furniture. The likelihood of finding an expensive, nice piece of furniture at a five and dime store seems pretty slim. But I must put credit where credit is due. And as crazy as it sounds, these TikTok influencers really do influence people. And so it's not a dumb idea. It's easy to make fun of, I suppose, but it's not a dumb idea for the White House to say we want our messaging to go out on TikTok. We want our version of events to be what the masses who are watching TikTok for their information. I shudder at the thought, but if they're watching TikTok to find out what's going on in the world, it makes sense that the White House would want to do that. So credit where credit is due. And thank you, Cyrus, for putting that up there. You're not going to repost those, I don't think, are you?
Oh, I guess not.
What
you just said, it got me thinking about how, you know, kids are, this is where they're finding their news. And, mm-hmm. you know, 10, 15 years ago, kids were getting their news from shows like the Colbert Report or what was the other one with
that Comedy Central thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was big. I can't believe it's escaping my mind, but those shows that's where... You're done with me. Turn them off.
I've already decided to... Well, no, I know what you're saying. Well, I don't know what to say. It's the times we live in.
Right.
And, right. You know, TikTok, whether we like it or not, it's here. It's hard to say if it's here to stay, but whether we like it or not. So all the more reason, if you ask me, why we need missionaries to go out into the howling wilderness of TikTok and spread the truth. Well, thank you, Cyrus. I appreciate it. Some phone calls, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Martine now in Sacramento, California. Good morning, Martine.
Good morning, Patrick. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, what is the, I think you pronounced it, Bohemian? Over in Joe?
What is the context?
What is that? Yes. Oh, the one in 15 through 19.
Of what?
Of Job 40.
Oh, Job. Okay, got it. Job, and what chapter are we in?
Chapter 40, verses 15 through 19.
Okay, I'm there, and so you're asking about the word behemoth?
Yes.
Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly what that is, because it seems to be maybe a dinosaur. It's descriptive of a dinosaur. And then the question is, well, how would they know about dinosaurs? Did they know about dinosaurs when Job is written? Because that would have been, you know, just a fraction of a time. And if you consider the time that the Earth has been in existence, so what are they guessing? 13.5 billion years or whatever the number is. Maybe not, it's probably not that long. But whatever the number, the age of the Earth, I'd have to go back and look for it. 3.5, 4.5 billion years, whatever it is. The epochs that saw dinosaurs were so long ago by comparison to the time in which Job would have been written. So there's no scientific evidence that would suggest that there were any dinosaurs that we're aware of anyway that were roaming the Earth. But it could be that they had discovered a giant fossil maybe. You know, they uncovered, you know, something that led them to realize that there used to be these huge creatures. But we don't know for certain. So I think the typical way of understanding that passage is some gigantic animal, some huge, huge animal that may have been a dinosaur. And if it wasn't a dinosaur, it was some other gigantic animal.
Okay.
You sound disappointed.
Okay, No, I was not too sure if it was because I wanted to describe it to someone, and now I was going to compare it to a giant dinosaur-like animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd be on target. I think the commentaries I've read on this in trying to interpret what does this word refer to is some gigantic animal. Also, and I don't know if it's in that passage. I'd have to do a little checking here, but it's either in that passage or a similar passage where it refers to what we interpret into or what we translate rather into English as a sea monster, that there was some leviathan is the term that's used, and it refers to some gigantic creature in the ocean. What was it? Was it a plesiosaurus? I think those are all gone. Was it the Loch Ness Monster swimming around in the Mediterranean? We don't know. But that's another creature that's named in Scripture under the name Leviathan, which would be some huge sea creature. And we just don't know.
Would that Leviathan be like a dragon almost?
Well, we don't know. That much I can say. Some people have wondered, was it a huge whale? Was it some other type of sea creature? Maybe a squid? Was it one of the giant squids, maybe? But as far as I'm aware, there's no definitive explanation of what Leviathan was or what the behemoth was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was curious for someone. Someone asked me, and I told them I'd do some research, and if I wasn't sure, I'd call you.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. You know, I'll refer you to Dr. Scott Hahn's website, scotthahn.com. He's got a lot of Bible study recommendations for commentaries and things, some of which he himself wrote. But that would be another step if you wanted to go deeper and really drill down into what do the commentators say on these examples. But that's what I would do to go deeper. Thanks, Martine. Appreciate it. Let's go to William now in Lexington, Kentucky. Good morning, William.
Good morning, Patrick. I have headphones in my phone. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So I have two questions. They somewhat go together. First is, you hear a lot about the story of St. Monica and I believe St. Augustine in terms of how she prayed and prayed for him to come back to the church.
Yeah.
And you hear about things that parents can do for falling away children. Well, for me, I was falling away for a little while, and I've been back, thank God, for a while now with the church. But my mother is falling away pretty obstinately. And she has used the phrase, I know everything there is to know about the Catholic Church. And if that were true, she'd be going to Mass every day, but that's right. Kind of beside the point. So how do I love her as best I can, but, you know, still have a working relationship with her when she's so far away from the church, and I'm, you know, I've been a daily communicant as of late. And then secondly, when it comes to the Divine Mercy Chaplet and the promises that Jesus gave us, you know, for Protestants, I know, especially family members and then non-religious family members that either reject the family of God in the Catholic Church or reject Christianity altogether, you know, is it just simply have mercy and trust and hope, or, you know, how do we kind of think through that?
Yeah, let's start there. Well, of course, the motto that comes to us from the Divine Mercy Revelations is simply, Jesus, I trust in you. So it's not Jesus, I trust in my own arguments, or Jesus, I trust that I'm going to have the right answer to somebody's question, or Jesus, I trust in anything other than Jesus. Jesus, I trust in you. So I don't mean to be glib, and I'm not being glib, but I really do believe that's the answer to the question, that in terms of waiting upon God to provide you, or even if it's not through you, to provide the means for somebody to make his way back to the faith or to receive repentance or forgiveness and be repentant. These are all things that we trust in Jesus to accomplish, and our prayers, of course, have a role to play in that. Now, as to the first question, your mom, not knowing what your relationship with your mom is like, it's hard to know exactly what to recommend. You said, how do you have a good working relationship? But I would assume a few things that would be true regardless of your relationship, and that would be just continue to love her and continue to let your light shine, as Jesus says, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and give glory to your Father in heaven. So it may be that without you having to say anything specifically about her departure from the faith, the fact that she sees you living the faith faithfully and receiving the sacraments, and you're joyful, and you're not cutting corners or doing things that maybe she's doing in her life, that can have a very powerful effect on her over time, that you would be a living witness, living the truth of the gospel as opposed to just saying it. It's good to say it, and we should say it, but it's also important to show it with our own lives. So I would recommend that, certainly. You could just remind her, Mom, I mean, the truth is the truth, and just because you now have departed from it doesn't make it any less true. Has she given you any specific reason why she's alienated from her faith?
No, not really. She kind of, you know, explains it this way, that her life experiences have led her to take on a multitude of beliefs. So it's really a long-winded way of her, without really knowing what she's saying, proclaiming that she's a moral relativist. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, whatever is good for you is good for you, and whatever is good for me is good for me. There's also another factor. I have been, over the years, considering religious life, and the blockage for me right now is student loan debt. So as soon as that's down, you know, out of the way, I hope to actually make that jump. But she really lives with a fear of not having me in her life. And, you know, it's resulted in us having some pretty heated verbal arguments of like, you know, Mom, you've got to let that go. And she says, well, no, I'm not going to back down, and so on and so forth. And I really worry about, you know, our relationship in the future. And I also struggle with not only her, but others. I struggle with despairing over the potential savior of people's souls, especially since I've become deeper in my Catholic faith. I really struggle with that.
Don't despair. Keep this in mind, that this is not your job. This is God's job. The salvation of souls is not up to you. Salvation of your soul is up to you, but everyone else's is not up to you. So there's no point in despairing. There's no purpose. There's no reason to despair, because when you think of it this way, God loves your mom. And is your dad in the picture still? Has he died, or where is he?
He is. That's a kind of a long story. He's born and raised Episcopalian, and we actually have a very deep relationship that is still very good right now. And I'm actually trying to create some inroads to maybe bring him into the church. That's a long way away, but we'll, you know, God willing, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, that's a good project that you've got there, and you're helping your parents in two different ways. And who knows, maybe if he wound up becoming Catholic, that might give your mom a little impetus to return to the practice of her faith. If she's
they
a reader,
separated, but yes. Oh, I see. Yeah. No, I understand your point. They've been divorced for about 20 years.
I wondered where your dad was in the picture of all this. Yeah. Well, so my advice, I do have to take a break, but my advice would be if you continue keeping a good relationship as best you can with your mom, be patient with her, be respectful to her, but don't be afraid to share with her, no, Mom, that's not true. That's not true. Jesus said otherwise. And in your respectful, loving, persistent way, you may just get her to come back around again. But keep praying for her, obviously, and keep showing her a good example. Thanks, William. Give me a call back one of these days. I'd love to talk to you more. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Keeping it relevant. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
We are back. Thank you for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. And keep in mind that you can call and be part of the experience. The number to dial is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can also send me a message or email, rather, if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you'll be able to send me, just click on the contact button, you could send me a message. I want to catch you up to date. You may have seen that picture of a woman being carried out on a makeshift stretcher. She was very, very pregnant, probably near delivering. She was in the maternity hospital that was not shelled, I guess it was hit by rockets from Russia. Well, she is being reported as having died, and she and her baby both died. And I'm looking at her picture. This is in the city of Mariupol, and everything around this litter that she's on and the four or five men who are carrying her to safety, everything around it is utterly destroyed. It's just, you know, just ruins of what once was a hospital, and they're carrying her across the rubble. She appears to be awake. I mean, her eyes are open. She's holding her belly, and you can see right where her hand is. There's blood apparently on her. She's wearing like black pants, and there appears to be blood on the pants. And so from what I can tell, it looks as though maybe she was hit by shrapnel. But in any case, this unknown woman, we don't know her name, or at least I haven't seen any reports on her name. But she and her baby both died as a result. So I'm going to retweet this story from the New York Times. It has this picture. The picture is not gruesome, but it's a reminder of what's going on there on a daily basis, a second-by-second basis, and how many innocent people are being killed as a result of this madness. Please may it stop. I hope you're praying for peace, especially now that we're in Lent. Pray for peace. 888-914-9149. Now, as a part of this bigger picture, Pew Research several years ago, this is going back to, I think, 2017, they did a study in Russia, and this, of course, well before this situation in Ukraine. They did a study surveying Russian citizens as to what they think of the former Soviet Union, the Soviet Union that was effectively built by Stalin and operated, you know, as this evil empire, as President Ronald Reagan termed it, for many decades. It collapsed in on itself in 1990. But people now, 30 years later, many of them, surprisingly, they're very nostalgic about this, at least according to the survey that was done by Pew. So let me share some of this with you. Recently, Vladimir Putin called the breakup of the Soviet Union the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. He said tens of millions of our fellow citizens and countrymen find themselves beyond the fringes of Russian territory. Now, he said that about, you know, not quite 20 years ago, but he's repeated this line since then. Now, the article points out, and this is from Pew, while not all Russians necessarily agree with Putin's characterization, most do view the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991 as a bad thing. So according to the Pew Research Center's survey of Russia and 17 other countries in Central and Eastern Europe that was conducted between 2015 and 2016, then it was issued in 2017, they say that this view of nostalgia and positive feelings about the former USSR, this godless communist evil empire, quite a few people really wish that it was back in action. For example, in Russia, as well as in some of the former Soviet republics, such as Armenia and Moldova, roughly 7 in 10, or more in some cases, view the Soviet collapse as a bad thing. So 70, 75, 80% of the population in some of these places, they see the collapse of the Soviet Union as a bad thing. In Belarus, 54% see it as a bad thing. There were five other former Soviet states that were surveyed, three in the Baltics, so Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, that were forcibly incorporated into the USSR. They are among the least likely to view the Soviet breakup as a bad thing. Another survey that was done in 2017 by Pew shows that in Russia, a 10% point drop in the share of Russians who say the collapse of the Soviet Union was a bad thing for the country, down to 59% compared to 69% in 2015. This change, they say, goes hand in hand with an improved overall economic outlook among Russians, until recently, of course. Positive feelings for the USSR generally are greater among older people in Russia and the other former Soviet republics that were surveyed. For example, while 78% of Russians aged 35 and older in the 2015 survey see the breakup as a bad thing, half of Russians under 35 feel this way. Now, I would, just to pause here for a second, I would think that if you were old enough to have lived through any part of the Soviet era, up to and including its collapse, that you would, the last thing you would want would be a return of the Soviet Union, with the unbelievable privation and shortages and government stores that had no product. You had to wait in long lines to get gasoline or to get food, grocery store shelves that were empty, shoddy equipment, shoddy cars, shoddy airliners, a widespread, really a ubiquitous surveillance state with informants and bugs in the walls and things, and a ruthless totalitarianism that was the Soviet government. I mean, why would anyone ever want to go back to that? But there are people for whom that's what they would prefer, amazingly. And this nostalgia, according to Pew, also goes to people's nostalgia for Joseph Stalin, who was a mass murderer on a vast scale, killing millions and millions of people intentionally, directly killing them through things like starvation, the forced famine in Ukraine, which is, as so often is referred to, the breadbasket of Europe. Well, it's called the breadbasket of Europe because it has so much wheat, and it is so arable, and the wheat grows so well there. And what Stalin did was, for a period of time, he starved the Ukrainians. He took all the wheat out and left them with nothing. And maybe upwards of 6 million people were killed by this terrible policy. He wanted to depopulate Ukraine. And there are plenty of other horrors that he perpetrated against his own people. But amazingly, people still today would prefer Stalin over what's the option to Stalin? Putin? I think Putin wants to be the next Stalin. So if you're interested in those numbers, we'll have that for you from the Pew Research Organization. Also, just a little detail here as a footnote. The government of Ukraine is publishing promotional videos online offering Russian pilots a reward if they defect to Ukraine with their aircraft. So the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense, they have at least one promotional video in Russian targeted at Russian pilots saying, listen, if you defect to Ukraine with your aircraft, we'll give you $1 million. You, the pilot, will give you $1 million American if you defect with a jet, and we'll give you $500,000 American if you defect with a helicopter.
How will they ever see that commercial, though? Because isn't all of that being censored?
Well, it doesn't say exactly how that's being delivered to them. I'm sure that on Telegram and TikTok, it's amazing how often I say those words nowadays. I think that the avenues to disseminate these kind of videos are still available to Russians. I mean, they're in Ukraine, so they're using Ukrainian internet. And Ukrainian internet hasn't blocked those services. So if their phone has internet connectivity, they can see these things. And apparently they have a way of figuring out where they're most likely to see them. So they're pushing these out. Could you imagine if you're flying around if you're a Russian helicopter pilot, Cyrus, and you get one of these videos and it's legit, and the government of Ukraine is saying, just land the helicopter. Let us know where you're going to land it. We won't shoot you. In fact, we're going to give you a check for $500,000.
Where do I land?
Yeah, really.
In a war.
Where do you want this
in
thing?
A war I don't want to participate anyway, and I'm the bad guy? Where do I land?
Yeah, just give me the. Tell me where to land this, and I will be happy to do so. And so that's happening. It'd be interesting to see. You know, to what extent that actually is successful. They already, at least if the figures are accurate, have just badly mauled the Russian military in terms of the number of just all kinds of different categories of equipment, tanks, planes, helicopters, you name it. The numbers are really mounting. So we'll see what that means in the bigger picture. But we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back to your phone calls. If you want to call me, my number is 888-914-9149. I have room for you right now, but that's going to change soon as the phone lines fill up as they tend to do. So if you've been waiting, you won't get a busy signal if you call me right now, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Are you playing war because of Ukraine, Cyrus? I'm just curious.
I just like that drum intro.
Yeah, it's
good. Everything else is just bonus.
Can you imagine, like, hey, some Russian guy just walked in here with a $500,000 bill. He wanted to buy something. Because going back to the Russian pilot thing, Cyrus, if you're the Russian pilot who defects and you hand over your MiG or your helicopter, as the Ukrainian government wants you to do, my advice, ask for the money in 20s.
Yeah,
it'll be harder to trace.
And then disappear, because I have a feeling you're going to be, they're going to be looking for you.
Yeah, so you don't want to be like, hey, all I have is a $1,000 bill. Can you break a $1,000 bill? Get it in 20s. You're going to need a pickup truck for all those 20s. Let's go to Luis in Fullerton, California. Good morning, Luis.
Morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
I had a question, and I just realized it wasn't in the gospel yesterday, but it made me think of it. In the Bible, whenever Jesus either performs a miracle or, you know, something miraculous happens, and he tells the people or the disciples, speak this to no one, or, you know, tell no one what you just saw, and then people told him. So I guess my question is, number one, either why did Jesus say that? Obviously, he knew they were going to say something. And why did the disciples or people say, go against what Jesus had just told them?
Yeah. Well, the foundation for that is what's known as the messianic secret. And what that means is that these deeds that Jesus performed, at least initially, were not intended to be proclaimed by just the average person, just the average run-of-the-mill person. And so Jesus told them or admonished them to say nothing. And you're right, he knew what would happen, but he told them not to say it because they were not the authorized messengers. It would become the apostles and other disciples who would have that role. And so proclaiming the kingdom was not something that Jesus wanted just the average person with no preparation, etc., to do. So that's why he tells them that. Now, why would they do it regardless of what Jesus had told them to do? I would have to think that human nature being what it is, that they were so overcome with joy and amazement and awe and maybe even fear that this miracle had been performed, that they couldn't help themselves. And they just couldn't help it. They just told. I mean, and by the way, if you were blind your whole life, you wouldn't have to say anything. If suddenly you show up in your hometown and you can see again, that would be a big deal. And the same would be true if you were dead and everybody knew you were dead and then you were raised from the dead. That would be a big deal. So I just think they couldn't help themselves. And they were exploding with a desire to tell people what happened to them. That's my take on it.
Oh, makes sense. Thanks, Patrick.
You got it. Good to talk to you. And let's talk again, shall we? 888-914-9149. How about Sean now in... Where are you, Sean? Brilliant, Wisconsin. Am I saying the name correct, Lee?
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay. Well, welcome aboard, sir.
And good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. My question is, we have a get-together this Friday with some friends, and I was wondering, can you abstain from meat on Thursday and not Friday?
It reminds me of Wimpy. In Popeye, I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. Remember that guy?
Yep.
The answer is no. No, it's non-transferable. So you can certainly fast or abstain from meat on Thursday as a penance, but it wouldn't offset your abstaining from meat on Friday. So the church's rule is abstaining from meat on all Fridays. Well, all Fridays throughout the year, unless you substitute another penance for it on that day. And during Lent, all Fridays during Lent and Ash Wednesday. So those are without exception. So you can't offset by doing something else on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the long and the short of it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you, Sean, and thank you. Let's go now to Margaret in Chicago. Good morning, Margaret.
Hi, this is about the Russian, giving the Russian pilots money. The only problem with that plan is, what do they do once they get the check? They can't go back to Russia, and their family's over there. So that's the only flaw in this plan. I mean, if they could defect somewhere along with their family, that's a good idea, and I think a lot of them would take it. But you got to think about what the consequences are from Mother Russia once you've taken that check.
This is why Tom Clancy wrote the book, what was it called? I just had it in my brain, and I lost the title of the book. So it's Hunt for Red October, because Captain Ramius, who was the Soviet sub-captain, he did get his family out before he defected. So if the Russians are smart, they will have watched Hunt for Red October, and they will do what Captain Ramius did, and get their families out before they land that helicopter and collect the money. And you can tell I'm being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, right, Margaret?
Right.
No, you're right. I mean, obviously, if your whole family is back in Russia and they know that you are a pilot and you just handed over a multi-million dollar jet to Ukraine and they paid you for it, absolutely it's going to go badly for your family. So I could see why it would be tempting, but probably not tempting enough in the case of pilots who couldn't protect their families back in Russia.
Yeah, and I don't know if Putin's letting people leave. No.
I haven't seen any evidence yet that the borders are closed. There are videos. You might find this interesting, Margaret. There are videos circulating on social media this morning of people in Red Square with the Kremlin in the background, and they're being interviewed just in public, being interviewed about their thoughts on Ukraine. And if they say even a word that is negative about it, they get arrested by police on the spot and just dragged off into these police vans. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm sure Russia knows everything about these people, everything from, you know, they spy on their own people, so.
Yeah, I'm glad we don't do that here.
I'm glad they don't kill us yet for what we've written on social media or anything like that, or thrown us in jail, but yeah. There's always tomorrow. So, I as long as they have a plan B to escape with their family, mm-hmm. I think it will work, but they've got to have a defection way for their family to get out. They have to be able to also have a country allow them in.
Yeah, I suppose if they wanted to stay in Ukraine and fight, I don't know to what extent any Russians are doing that. If they've, you know, turned what Russia would regard to be traitors, I don't know about that. But you're right; it would be a calculation that you'd really have to be careful if you decided to do that, because the repercussions would be huge against your family and friends.
Right. And in the thought of staying in Ukraine afterwards. Ukraine's gone. And what are you going to do? Stay in in the rubble? You can't stay there. So it's a terrible situation to be in.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they're offering it to them anyway. Maybe someone will take them up on it.
And, you know, it could also be, Margaret, is more intended as a psychological lever against the Russians, as a way to demoralize them, to confuse them, to anger them. I mean, it could be intended primarily for that purpose, and only secondarily for a pilot who might defect with the equipment. I suppose it's possible, but I'm sure this is all three-dimensional chess, and there are layers upon layers of meaning in some of the things that are being done, would be my guess.
Yep. Well, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Great talking to you, Margaret. Thank you, and hope we talk again soon. Let's go to Emilia now in Phoenix. Good morning, Emilia. Hi, Emilia.
Hello.
It's Emilio, not Emilia. Emilio,
yeah.
Right? Okay. They spelled your name wrong. Okay, there we go. Welcome.
Well, thank you. So I called a couple days ago, I think on Friday, mm-hmm. and then Thursday. I have another question.
It's okay.
My question is, why do we rely on the Pope?
Well, short answer is because Jesus said to St. Peter, the first Pope, he said, "Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." So the rock that he's referring to there, this is in Matthew 16, if you want to read the whole chapter to get the context. Specifically, it's verse 18, but read Matthew chapter 16 for context. He says that this rock is what he will build his church on. Now, the rock not only referred to Peter's profession of faith, because he had just, when Jesus said, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" and the other apostles were giving incorrect answers. Some say Elijah, some say one of the prophets. And then he said, "Well, who do you say that I am?" And Simon, whose name he changed to Peter, he said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus said, "You are blessed, Simon, son of Jonah, for no mere man has revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. Therefore, I say to you, you are rock, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And I will give to you," and he says this in the singular form, like you personally, "I will give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Now, he does say that last part about binding and loosing, he does say that to all the apostles two chapters later in Matthew chapter 18. But in Matthew 16, we see that he gives Peter a name change from Simon to Peter. And when you see God changing somebody's name, like if you were paying attention to the readings yesterday at Mass, you know that Abram was going to be, his name was going to be changed by God to Abraham, but it was Abram first. Then he changed it to Abraham, and it was symbolic of, you probably heard that in the gospel or in the reading, the first reading yesterday. So there's an example of a name change, and the name change indicates a change in status. It indicates a change in what your mission is before God. And so Jesus changed Simon's name to Peter, which in Aramaic means rock. It wasn't a name, quite frankly, Emilio. That's what's interesting. It'd be as if Jesus said, and you are chair, and upon this chair I will build my church. Chair is not a name, but it became a name because Jesus said that Simon's new name would be Peter. So he says this to him. He says that he received revelation. He says that he's going to build the church on this rock. So it's not only Peter's profession of faith, but also Peter himself. And he says that he will give him these keys that are symbolic of the prime minister in the kingdom of David. So the Israelites had lived with a king for a long time. It wasn't God's plan originally, but when God permitted them to have kings, the second in command, the prime minister, would have a key, or more than one key perhaps, as a symbol of his authority, that he could act in the name of the king. He wasn't the king, but he had the authority given to him by the king to do certain things in the name of the king. So these are all things that Jesus is saying to and about Simon Peter. And so beginning there, we see not only those things, but also Jesus saying to Peter, Satan has desired to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for your faith that when you recover, that you will strengthen your brethren. So Peter was one of the apostles, but he was the head of the apostles. And there are many other things that we could say, but just from Scripture alone, we can see that Peter had a special role and a special authority among the 12 apostles. And it's from that the church recognizes that the successor of Peter, the Bishop of Rome, he, although he's not counted as one of the 12 apostles, he does have that unique authority that Peter had among the apostles. So we rely on the Pope because Jesus said that the Pope would be that visible sign of unity. He would be the one who would confirm. And what that means in context is to strengthen or to encourage or to help rally people to do the right thing. He would be the one who would feed the sheep. He would be the one who would bind and loose and exercise the keys of authority. So all of it really goes back to Jesus and what he said about Peter and the church understanding that this office as Bishop of Rome goes after Peter dies, then the next Bishop of Rome, the next Pope, the next Pope, the next Pope, etc. How's that for a short answer?
The only thing is there's been some bad popes, and there's also the fact that Jesus chose Peter as mm-hmm. the first pope. Mm-hmm. The other popes were elected.
Right. Yeah, and the reason for that is because Jesus had gone back to heaven. So he left that authority to do those things in the hands of the church. So you're right, the following popes were elected. And yes, there have been some bad popes. I wrote a whole book on the topic called Pope Fiction, and there's chapters on some of those bad popes. But the thing is, Jesus didn't promise that every pope would be holy or that every pope would do a good job. He just said that upon the rock of the papacy, he would build his church. And most of the popes have been good. Some have been really good, saints, and some have been pretty bad. But overall, I'd say most of the popes have been generally pretty good. And look, and here's something else to remember, Emilio. 2,000 years have gone by and the church is still here. So even with the bad popes, it shows that Jesus is the one in charge and it's his power that's keeping the church in place. That's pretty impressive, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right. All right, thanks, Emilio. God bless you. All right, the number 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And I don't have time to tell you what I'm going to tell you, but I'm going to tell you when we come right back.